allow your family members to enter into this space. They're on the other side of love. Yeah, those are your ancestors that you can anchor into their energy. So I just want to take a moment to allow yourself to really take a breath and feel that, because grief never goes away. It's just that the sharpness of the pain isn't as intense.
Awake Enge, this is Mental Matters, hosted by Asako Toto.
Awareness. Many of us haven't been given the tools to really understand our inner world, our inner terrain. And we haven't been afforded a space to feel our emotions, our authentic emotions. And you need to be able to feel your emotions to understand yourself, understand your biology.
I went through when you messaged me.
In 2013, I started to get ill, and there was significant fatigue. And I kept going to my doctor stating that I wasn't feeling well, and I was really, really drained. And more, no matter what sleep I was doing, no matter what I took off my plate, I was just getting more tired. And so fast forward a few months, I kept going to the hospital, to our emergency center, and they kept saying that I just had the flu and just to go home and rest and it would go away. Yet by this time, I wasn't able to walk. I was riddled with pain and I was stuck in my bed. And then on the fifth visit to the ER, they finally did an MRI and they discovered that I had lesions in my cerebellum and in my brainstem. Therefore, there was a high alert that there was a possibility that I was going to die. So they admitted me in the hospital and I stayed there for almost close to 40 days. And anybody that's in Canada and understands the medical system, you get admitted when you are coming close to dying or there's something really impacting your body. And when they don't know what is causing the illness, you go through a battery of painful tests. So I had to go through lumbar punctures, which are spinal taps. I had to have biopsies. I had several biopsies. I had even radiation put into my system to all discover what was causing these lesions. And the tests kept coming back that they were atypical, yet not enough information to say what is the root cause. So they were going to do a brain biopsy and take a piece of my brainstem. Yet, thankfully, the doctor said, you know what, all these tests are coming back atypical, so let's not go be playing with that part of her brain, because we could do some damage and still not have information. So I was released from the hospital without a diagnosis and without a plan. So then that becomes this wilderness of where I had to learn, you know, a new lifestyle, because like I said, I wasn't able to walk. The lesions had changed the physicality of my eyes. So I was cross-eyed, I had vertigo, I was vomiting. I wasn't having any bowel movements. I was a solo parent to twin boys that had just turned four. And so I had to navigate my way through. And then thankfully in 2015, that's when I discovered meditation. And meditation allowed me to go inside and really understand the nervous system, understand and face the traumas that I had experienced from a childhood going on, and really allow the body to somatically release those charges in my body and really expand what mindfulness was, and releasing being in my head and allowing myself to come back into my body, which was really difficult because when you've experienced pain, like you said at the beginning, you want a recluse. You don't want to have to experience that again. And you don't feel that you can trust that. So creating a relationship with my body to come back, because you can only really experience mindfulness by being in the body, by accessing all your senses and being in the now, in the presence. And so that journey, you know, of self-discovery and self-awareness, it was a lot of warrior work. And I removed a lot of things from my life. I removed alcohol. I wasn't a consumer of drugs, so that wasn't there. I wasn't smoking cigarettes, so that wasn't there. I removed sex. I removed spending. I really engaged with my emotional eating, and I really dived into what parenting was, like really seeing the twin boys as human beings and not the child that the parent is supposed to raise. Actually see a human being and be curious of how are they experiencing life. And so that illness allowed me to go through a grief. Even though I didn't die, parts of me did die. Parts of the way that I lived and the way that I navigated through the world did.
So you mentioned that you stayed there at the hospital for 40 days and still and being released without diagnosis. And I know the fact of staying in the hospital for amount of days, because I had a dislocated wrist and I had to stay at the hospital, I think, for almost 2 weeks. So it was nothing compared to what you experienced. But I get the frustration. And how, when you were released by the hospital, how were you coping mentally? And also, was it hard to let go in terms of the things that you've lost within yourself?
Oh yeah, of course. But there was this surrender part inside of me. There was an opening of recognizing, seeing like a lot of the materialistic and a lot of the things that I held on so dearly really didn't mean anything. And it also changed the relationship with how I connected with God, Allah, universe, whatever you use as your higher source. It really allowed me to have a surrender that if it was my time to die, that everything was okay. And telling I have three boys. So my oldest was 17 or 18 at the time. So giving him language that, you know, if I die, everything's okay. And if you need to be angry with God, you can go through that process, yet don't stay there for too long. Because this is the way life is. And we aren't taught to really have a good and healthy relationship with death. So, you know, going through that grief process really allowed me to have a different relationship with death. And really see that we really don't have much control. We have a perception that we think we have control, yet we really don't, because we don't know when our time is.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you when it comes to that. And also the fact that your son knew that you're close to that, to death. And also, would you say that he experienced, I would say that when you told him this, what emotions did he show? Would you, if it would happen that you have died, do you think that he could have coped?
Well, everybody copes. I would hope that he would go through the grieving process. You know, that was a very traumatic situation for him, as you want to separate from the self and you want to disassociate, because what you're feeling inside is very overwhelming, intense. To lose your parents is very disorientating, and it activates a lot of fear in your system. So the sadness and the anger and the helplessness and the frustration is all blended in there. Would he have coped? I don't know what his mechanisms are, because we haven't faced that. I don't know what that story was. Yet I can't tell you what I took from that situation was empowering him to go within himself. And when I learned meditation, I had him learn meditation also, because I understood the power that is within ourselves, that we are lured to look outside of ourselves. Yet our connection is always within. Our answers are always within. And therefore, it's holding a space of allowing you to feel all your emotions, not just the ones that are pleasant. It's allowing a space for all of them to be felt so that you can hear the messages and you can allow yourself to release them and let go and not have blockages stuck inside the body.
Mm. The reason why I asked the question is the fact that I remember when I was young, I attended, I think, four or five funerals. Some of the people I knew, some of them and my family members, because in the last from 2019 or 2020 from 2021 until 2022, I lost my grandmother, I lost my stepfather, and I lost my uncle. And I realized that at that certain time when I was a boy, I didn't process it properly. I didn't process to the fact that, no, now I'm grieving, now I'm feeling this pain. I feel like I put this facade that, no, I'm all right, I will cope. That's why I asked this question, because, and also as boys, we have a different way of facing these things. We have this as the society as a whole. Society has told us, no, you shouldn't show emotions, you shouldn't cry, you shouldn't do such things, because once you do those things, you will seem weak. So yeah, and also going back to meditation, according to my research, I think it's something, is the Eastern thing, in terms of your Chinese, your Japanese, in those areas. So how did you come across meditation, Sal? How did you come across meditation during your journey of healing?
I just wanted to back up myself for the vulnerability that you just shared. And I would like to allow your family members to enter into this space. They're on the other side of love. Yeah, those are your ancestors that you can anchor into their energy. So I just want to take a moment to allow yourself to really take a breath and feel that, because grief never goes away. It's just that the sharpness of the pain isn't as intense, yet we'll get waves of it showing up in different ways. And you are exactly correct. Men, the male species, the narrative and the cultural indoctrinations that are placed about men not being able to be sensitive or vulnerable or express their tears without a narration of them being weak is the reason why there's so much suicide and aggression and disconnection. So I just want to hold space of thank you for opening up the conversation for others to enter in to see, you know what, I didn't have a space to verbalize or process what I was experiencing. And then all this stuff I just kind of shoved in a junk drawer and just kept going, not recognizing, oh, it wasn't gone away. Like, it all gets stored and it's going to show up eventually. And it's, what are the tools I'm going to develop to be able to face and process this? And that is one of my missions, because I have three boys, to change the narration as a woman also, to be able to hold space for men to feel their vulnerability and sensitivity. We're always dictating that we want a male that's emotionally available, yet the same instance, you want to criticize when they are being sensitive and vulnerable and mocking and belittling. So you're not able to have the two. So which one are you actually being intentional to serve? And we all make mistakes as humans. We default into patterns. Some emotions make us uncomfortable, so we create this language of belittling and joking because we haven't been taught to do deep listening and holding space. And so I want to thank you for that strength of being vulnerable and bringing in your family members, your ancestors, in this conversation, because you are being the change. You know, everybody wants change in the world, yet the change is all within us. And we have to bring that change outside into the world and hold these kind of conversations that we're having right now. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you for those words. And yeah, and as you said, I also agree with you with that thing of, I think that's why I started this podcast. At first, I didn't realize that I have this unattended trauma in some way, but actually something happened to me. So that led to me of doing this podcast, not realizing that also those things had effect within me inside of not being enough, not healing properly. And I feel like in terms of, you mentioned the availability and crying out, I feel like one of the things that I always suffered from is tears. And I feel like that's why I started doing I had this mentality to know I shouldn't cry. I shouldn't be like just a man, because once you start not being the man that society wants you to be. As I've said that, you seem weak and you seem you're not a man enough and no woman will want you. I feel like that's another thing. And I love the fact that you raised something, the thing of the amount of suicides when it comes to men is so high that we don't no longer care about men as in general. So I would like to say thank you. And also thank you so much for recognizing that you were able to open this space out. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And also too, there is a part of the dialogue of when men open up with their tears and sensitivity and vulnerability, then all of a sudden their sexuality is questioned. Yeah. It's as if like a heterosexual man, if he's too sensitive or too vulnerable, or he shares too much tears, that there's something wrong with his sexuality. And that is such a disservice to any human being, that your emotions are attached to your sexuality. And this is where we have to change this narrative, because there you go shaming and stigmatizing people. So what do? They recluse and they stay isolated inside and they suffer. And our energy is contagious. So if I'm suffering inside, everywhere and each person I'm interacting with, they're engaging with that energy. If you want to believe it or not, it's true. Anytime if you've been in an environment and somebody's miserable or they're sad or they're angry or they have a lot of anxiety, people can feel that energy. And then they want to ostracize the person rather than gather them in and ask, what is going on? Do you need somebody to listen? Do you need somebody to see you? To validate that, you know what? I see you. How can I be of service for you? Can I just listen for maybe 5 minutes? But that's another part of the conversation for men, that women included, but a lot of men will attack other men of showing their sensitivity and vulnerability, that all of a sudden their sexuality is in question. And we don't even know how to bring that sensitivity to, you know, show that compassion. Because all of a sudden, even if men show it to another man, all of a sudden sexuality is questioned again. And it's like, when did we have to be barbaric and start hitting each other to show that, oh, that's how I care for you? Like, why can't I give you a hug? Why can I not hold space to see that you're crying? Allow the overwhelm and stress that's put on any human being to allow them to have that space to let go of that. I call it a pressure cooker. You have to release the valve to let the steam out, because if you just take off that lid, everything's going to explode. But the tears allows the toxins and the overwhelm to be released. And tears are not only attached to sadness. It's a plethora of emotions that you're feeling all at once. Like if tears were only sadness, then why do people cry when a baby's born? Why do you cry when somebody wins a championship? Why do you cry when all of a sudden you won the lottery or you propose to somebody? We have such a maladaptive, a wrong relationship with tears that we don't even honor the magnitude of what tears are and how they help service our body and be able to connect into our nervous system, our energy force with our emotions, and let it be expressed in a way that we don't have to take action to offload.
I feel like that's the thing. There's this misunderstanding that when it comes to women, this big, massive misunderstanding, they're thinking that men want too much. According to my knowledge, according to my experience, men only need someone that they could listen, they can vent upon and not being charged of doing so. So, and also one thing, speaking about tears, something that I started being familiarizing myself with being sad, being having, trying to force myself to cry. At some point, I started forcing myself to cry, but I couldn't. The last time that I cried, probably it's when my grandmother actually died. At the funeral, I had to read her obituary so that, like, tears started to come out. That was the last time that I cried. And sometimes, at some point, I judge myself of saying no. Why am I'm not crying whenever I feel sad, whenever I feel that thing of coming back, of that trauma coming back? So Yeah, for some, in some way, that thing really haunts. I would say haunts me in a way. I try going to therapy, but I haven't received any date yet. So I'm trying to be better to myself and trying to make a way of trying to find healing, trying to be this person or who is always seeking for healing and not always be choosing myself in my life to be miserable. One of the things that helped me through the journey is doing this podcast, being able to interview people like you, people who have the experience, people who have some sort of answers, as much as they might not be the actual answers, but at some point I know that I will select something and try to incorporate it upon my life.
Recognize that it's like there's two parts in your biology. So the part that we create defense mechanisms to protect ourselves from not having to experience pain. Yet there's another part that wants to be the authentic part. And so your authentic part needs you to feel your actual emotions. Yet there's a narrative in your mind that has created, if I feel my authentic emotions, I won't get any women. The men will make fun of me. I'll be literally, your mind thinks that I will be taken out of the tribe and I'll be left alone. And so all of us wants to have a sense of belonging, because if we are not belonging to the tribe, we'll die. Nobody can live on their own. We all have to learn to live with each other as humans. So in your biology, when you understand that I want to cry, yet I cannot access this part, because your defense mechanisms have created this armament around your vulnerability and sensitivity. There's somewhere in your biology and your nervous system that says you cannot go there because of these narrations and these definitions in your mind. But also, the last time you went there, you felt a lot of pain, and I don't want you to feel pain. And that's the work that we have to engage in our nervous system, our defense mechanisms, engage in deconstructing these belief systems that we have in our mind, and allow a reconnection into our vulnerability, into our sensitivity. And it's physically, it is work. Like you said, I try to access these tears and they're not coming, and I'm giving you a space, yet it's really safety. And if you really ask yourself, you'll see within yourself, you still don't feel safe to do that.
I believe that there's a lot of information, actually. And there's a lot of information. And also for the fact that to be able to just take all that information in one setting. Like, yeah, I believe. And I love the fact that I had other plans of connecting this in conversation, but I love the fact that where it's going. The initial conversation was to go talk about mental health. And I believe that we are on the right path and able to say these things, but I believe some may see it as a message to men, but also I believe that is a message also to women, women have this perception of men have this perception of women. At some point, that, as I've said earlier, that men no longer trust women with their emotions, and as you said, you can't have someone who is very emotional with his feelings. With his feelings, and also have this masculine guy who doesn't talk about anything. You must choose one. So I really appreciated the conversation. And I think the fact that we are right out of time. And I would like to say, do you have anything else to add on the conversation? Because before...
Yeah. I just want let any listener, if you found anything of value or if there was anything interesting, you can find me on my website, which is liftoneself.com. And you can find me on social media, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook under Lift Oneself. And I also have a podcast that have these kind of conversations also, and supply people with tools to have their self-discovery of what are the things that will bring me into my healing. And not just the healing, but feel joy again and feel alive. So anybody that's listening, I just want to remind you to please be kind to yourself. Kindness to ourself is really important with the healing journey and allowing there to be grace.